You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
The final presentation today will be Roldan Mouradian, who is senior researcher at the Department of Cultural Anthropology and Development Studies at Radboud University. Is that correct? More or less. And his research interests cover collective action and rural development, in particularly in Africa and Latin America. So, Roldan, your final presentation of the afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have a challenging task of being the last speaker of the day, but so I will try to be fast. So we have some time for discussion. My paper is much modest than the previous ones, and very modest in the scope. It's basically a literature review. So what I wanted to do is just to look at what is the empirical evidence about the precisely the potential and limits, a bit copying the title of this conference, of farmers' marketing groups as catalyst of rural development. So what I'm going to do is just to present you a summary of what I consider is more or less to be the state of the art around this issue. So what is the background of this? As you know, coinciding with a rising interest in solidarity economy and social economy, I mean, there has been a recent revival of the policy and research interest for agriculture in general. And this has been triggered by different processes and facts, but which includes, for example, the recent peaks in the price of agriculture, but also the realization that particularly in Africa, there is a very strong correlation between growth in the agricultural sector and economic growth in general. So agriculture that was for a long time neglected in development policy has now become a key issue in the global discussion. However, I mean, it's a fact that agriculture is dominated worldwide by small-scale producers. And the point is that these type of producers face very unfavorable conditions of production, particularly in developing countries. And it has to do with the incidence of transaction costs in these type of production systems. Besides that, there has been some major trends in the development of agri-food systems, and that has to do, for example, with the rising importance of standards, and also the high level of market, a rising level of market integration, particularly in the international trading and retailing parts of the value chains, and an increasing importance of supermarkets. And all these trends are putting additional burdens on farmers and small-scale farmers, because they have to, you know, to cope and to deal with these trends through higher level of what is called coordination, value chain coordination. And that's precisely the justification of why to put emphasis on farmers' group, because farmers' groups are probably the most important way, or one of the most important ways to deal with coordination problems in value chains. Because groups can both coordinate actions horizontally, I mean, among members of the group, but also with other agents of the value chain. So basically, these organizations can you know, reduce transaction costs by means of creating economies of scale for input supply, technological transfer, joint marketing, etc. But also by facilitating concerted action between farmers. And what is also very important is that they can also increase the bargaining power of smallholders vis-a-vis other value chain actors through joint supply systems or indirectly by means of increasing local prices. So this is overall the justification, that's very also justification of why cooperative and other forms of collective action among small-scale farmers should be very important in agri-food systems worldwide. That's the theory. So the purpose of this paper is to discuss under which conditions, and particularly based on the available empirical evidence, such institutional arrangements can contribute to enhance the level of market integration of small-scale farmers, and therefore to rural economic development. And as I said before, the paper is basically a review of the present literature. So it pretends to give a kind of a state of the art. Let's start with this, what I think is a very important feature of cooperative, and it distinguishes it from other investor-owned firms and other organizational arrangements, and it's what has been called this dual character or dual nature of co-ops. Co-ops, from an organizational point of view, they are firms, they are enterprises, but from a sociological perspective, they are also communities of actors whose interests are not always totally aligned, and that's a very important point. Because collective action and collective decisions makes enables cooperatives to coordinate actions among members, which gives them some advantages, particularly in sectors dominated by small-scale holders, as I said before. However, such decision-making structure itself makes them susceptible to a wide range of what has been called incentive problems, because not all the members, as I said, have the same interest. So arising from conflicts between, and these incentive problems arise from conflict between the collective and individual goals, and this is common to all social dilemmas. So this configuration, I think, makes cooperative particularly complex organizations whose performance depends on a variety of variables along mainly four domains that has been already characterized in the literature. So it depends on group characteristics, on organizational structure, the type of products and market in which it operate, and of course the external environment. It has to do with policies and availability of public goods, etc. So such combination of features makes cooperative both very prone to fail, and that's very important issue that I want to stress here. As business organizations, so it's quite challenging. I think that's one of the propositions here, is that it's extremely challenging to manage properly cooperative. Secondly, and that's why we are studying cooperatives, is it makes them a very interesting subject of both research and policy interventions. So understanding properly the factors influencing the performance of agricultural cooperative and their capacity to be catalyst of rural economic development requires not only to consider organizational elements, but also the dynamics of collective action. That means the factors enabling groups to achieve common goals. And it is well recognized that bonding social elements like trust, commitment, participation, reciprocity, etc., constitute key features of cooperative. Therefore, and that is extremely challenging, both from an academic point of view and from a policy perspective, to deal cooperative, because the study of cooperative performance and the promotion of cooperative performance requires an integrated and a comprehensive analytical framework, which necessarily has to include different disciplines, but also different factors and variables and dimensions. And that makes them quite special animals, very different to investor-owned firms or conventional capitalist firms. So I will go very quickly about what the literature says about the impacts of cooperative. I'm referring especially about economic impacts of cooperative. And you can look at the paper that is available online, but about the specific references. But several studies have shown positive effects on membership. And I have to say that the literature on the impacts of cooperative is relatively scarce and relatively recent. There are very few papers which have done a very systematic comparison, for example, between members and non-members of cooperative. And quite recent literature about that, despite the long history of cooperative. I think that's quite remarkable. So there has been shown that cooperative can offer better and more stable prices and higher levels of market participation, especially of specialty markets. They also might have positive effects on milk production and productivity, for example. So overall, they might produce a higher income among members compared to non-members, and higher input use, technological transfer and innovation, new marketing channels, May also create competitive yardsticks, so they might benefit not only the members but also the non-members indirectly by means, for example, of increasing the local prices of agricultural products. Competing with traders, conventional traders. But there has been, in the literature has been also reported, indirect social effects like enhanced women schooling, for example. So the evidence is quite strong about the positive effects of cooperative. However, several authors have found that the likelihood of cooperative membership increases with land size until a sort of threshold level is reached, after which the relationship between land size and membership is inversed. So that means that the smallest landholders tend to be excluded from cooperatives. So that's what has been called the middle class effect. So the poorest of the poor tend to not to benefit from rural cooperative. What is also interesting that other authors have also reported a nonlinear relationship between the distance to the road, for example, and cooperative membership. So distance to the road is positive related to the cooperative membership, the same as to a kind of threshold level after which a negative relationship between both variables is seen. So these results, which is still very preliminary because, as I said before, there is the evidence is not very abundant, suggests that collective action is more likely to be effective at intermediate levels of resources, assets, and transaction costs. And that's very important for the promotion of cooperative, but also for talking about what are the effects effects of cooperative in rural development. Based on this evidence, we can formulate this kind of intermediate transaction cost hypothesis, in which there is a kind of inverted U relationship between the level of transaction cost faced by farmers and the likelihood of effectiveness of collective action. So that means basically that cooperatives are not effective in any condition. There are particular conditions in which cooperatives can be enablers of rural development. That's very important, especially for people, practitioners in this conference. This means that you should not promote cooperative in all, in any kind of conditions. So the main point then is marketing cooperative and other forms of market organization can become effective catalysts of rural economic development, has been already shown in the literature. The main point is why are they not more generalized, particularly in poor areas of the world. And if you look at the literature, so many authors state things like, well, this African cooperative have had a generally unhappy history, for example, quoting some authors. So in general, cooperative movement, not only in Africa, but also in Latin America, have a kind of sad history. And it's quite a puzzle from a theoretical point of view. And I think this unhappy history can be explained, but what we could call the kind of structural tensions of agricultural cooperative. And if you look at the paper, I encourage you to look at the paper. I make a review of different studies that have characterized these tensions that are structural to the cooperative, particular to the cooperative. First, there is a tension between the social and business functions. That's quite interesting for this conference in general because it's quite well shown in the literature there are, in general, tensions between the equity and social concerns of cooperatives and the efficiency economic performance. Probably it will arise as a common feature of all, social or solidarity type of enterprises where it's very likely that they will face a trade-off between these two goals, which is very problematic, of course, for the sustainability in the long run. There is also tension with the membership of homogeneity and the external links, and there is still no consensus in the literature. But on the one hand, people say that homogeneity is good for collective action, and it reduces transaction costs. But at the same time, for example, some authors have shown that mixed cooperative, between women and men, are more successful because men tend to have more links with the external world, and therefore they enhance the capacity, the marketing capacity of the cooperative. There are also tensions between the keeping the coordination costs low and achieving enough economies of scale. So from the point of view of bargaining power, the biggest the cooperative, the better. However, when you increase the size of the cooperative, you also increase coordination costs among the members. So it kind of imposes limits to the growth of membership. There are also tensions between external support and enough autonomy. And a recent study that I think that has been supported by FAO and ILO, the authors conclude that most successful cases of cooperative in Sub-Saharan Africa, cooperative enterprises creation has depended on a substantial degree of intervention from NGOs and international donors. However, I mean, the literature is quite clear that interference, and particularly from the state, is one of the key success sources of failures of cooperative. So there is also kind of trade-off between the need for support, for external support, and the need for autonomous decision. There is also a tension between meeting a standard and satisfying the members, because, of course, if you supermarkets, for example, are setting more complicated standards and stricter quality standards, for example, some of the members necessarily will be excluded from the cooperative. They cannot meet this standard. So that's to align all the members to meet standards is problematic when you have a democratic decision-making structure. Lastly, there are also tensions between different cooperative functions, and that's well shown in the cooperative, especially in developing countries. It seems very difficult for cooperative, for example, to maximize different functions or services at the same time. For example, price, and marketing, and technological transfer, etc. When a cooperative is doing very well in technological transfer, they do less well in price. When they do well in price, they do bad in marketing, etc., etc. Especially in cooperative and the early development stages. Then the question: How can we support cooperative to cope with these tensions? And basically, there are three main approaches. I mean, intervention approaches that has to do with these three main dimensions of cooperatives: the marketing dimension, the know-how dimension, and the capabilities dimension. However, a major challenge for cooperative support is that these three domains of action cannot be addressed in a consecutive or independent way, since they are very much interdependent. For example, you cannot increase the social capital aspect of cooperative if you don't have enough incentive. And for having enough incentive for collaboration and collective action, you need good marketing services, for example, better prices. So unless you have better prices, it's very difficult to convince farmers to work together. So there is no kind of a priori order or pattern of intervention that managers can follow as a blueprint or development practitioners. So the most efficient allocation would depend on the specific combination of factors, endowments. I mean, and the needs for specific needs of collective of the collective enterprise at stake. And this is an additional challenge, not only for the cooperative, but also for the promotion of cooperative from the state or from NGOs. So basically, as conclusions of this review, first, what I said before, that the empirical evidence gathered so far about the impact of collective organizational forms of small-scale farmers shows that this organization holds a high potential of catalyst of rural economic development. There is abundant evidence about that. However, there is also abundant evidence showing that the tensions that I mentioned. So it is a kind of paradox that they have high potential but also high limitations to meet these potentials. Marketing farmers groups have more chances to be effective in inducing significant development effects when farmers deal with intermediate levels of transaction cost, and it's probably when they have middle-sized land holdings, when imperishable and high-value crops, and when there is intermediate access to public goods, like to roads, for example, by farmers. So that means that they are not at all the combination factor means that they are not at all panaceas. I mean, first of all, you need to assess when they can be effective, and how, I mean, they can be effective, and I said in which conditions. So there is the other conclusion. What I already said is now a pretty sequence of interventions to strengthen these organizations. And the more important thing is that to deal with a wide range of tensions outlined above requires very specific skills, especially managerial skills, which are often lacking in many cooperatives in developing countries. So basically the conclusion is that despite their potential, high potential contribution to rural economic development, is animals are particularly difficult to manage and to support.
Okay, thank you.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unrhys.org. Thank you for listening.